Guten Morgen, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to the TT Podcast. It's Paterberg time, it's Oude Quarremont time, it's time for the Tour of Flanders. Joining me, of course, to run through the race and the favourites, is my co-host Tom. Tom, can you give us your best Ronde van Vlaanderen?
Oh, wow, you put me on the spot there. I was getting ready to say hello, everyone. Ronde van Vlaanderen.
Very good. How are you?
I know that you and I love doing this accent, but we're both really bad at it when you hear actual Dutch / Flemish speakers actually do it.
Look, it comes from a place of love and a place of jealousy that we cannot nail it, but that does not stop us trying and practicing it.
Yeah, look, it might sound like a cheap cliche, but it is full of appreciation. Also because this is one of my favourite races of the year, so I'm quite happy to be talking about this one.
Why is it one of your favourite races?
Well, look, the monument debate's not a problem here, is it? No one's questioning the status of the Tour of Flanders.
That's true. And I think it gets that time of the year where you have Flanders and Roubaix one weekend after each other. And people are like, oh, what's the difference? Do I like Flanders more? Or do I like Roubaix more? The difference between them, apart from geographically where they are, is that Flanders is basically, I would say, kind of Roubaix on steroids. Some people would say all of cycling's on steroids. But what it is that the cobbled bits are hills in Flanders, and in Roubaix they're flat. The cobbles are tougher in Roubaix, but this is basically Roubaix with hills.
I think with Roubaix, the cobbles are so tough that, and all the riders will say this, you need a bit of luck with it, don't you? And sometimes your ability as a rider can be secondary in terms of whether or not you have a chance in the race. Whereas, you've got the hills. I think athletically, Flanders is that little bit harder. It's just a slightly different style of racing. And the Belgian fans just pip it for me over the French as well.
As I say, a lot of love for the Belgians. Tom, do you like my mug here, by the way? You can see it.
This is the first time I've seen that. That's a nice, lovely little bit of stash.
It's a yellow Tour de France mug, and it has each of the individual classification jerseys on it.
Did you buy that, or were you given it free at some sort of event or race?
Well, I was given it free by my little brother. My little brother, who I think bought it, but he moved house recently, and I went to help him move. And this was in the discard pile. This was for the bin.
So you took it as a commission?
And I was like, well, I love that. I got a football as well. I got some trainers and some chocolate that he got from Chris for Christmas, which is now, what, March. But the chocolate's still good.
Chocolate's good, was it? Nice little selection box. Or
this is why I say, if anybody ever asks you to move, no, if anybody ever asks you to help them move, go and help them because you'll get so much free stuff.
You can claim all their stuff. Oh, yeah.
Exactly. Anyway, back to the Tour of Flanders. Tom, I've asked you to come up with something to say about the routes. Do you want to whistle through what we've got in store?
Yeah, so there's actually not that much to say, I'll be honest, because the men's race, both races are finishing in Oudenaarde. Obviously, another horrible pronunciation there because I can't do Flemish words. But the women's race also starts there. The men's race begins in Antwerp. Apparently, they've been rotating between Antwerp and Bruges. So they started in Bruges last year. I was not really aware that it was a formal rotation. I just thought it was up to the organisers each year.
For our Belgian listeners, that's Antwerpen and Brugge.
Yeah. Although, we say Bruges, which is French, but Antwerp in French is Anvers.
How are you spelling that?
Anvers.
Right, so we say the French version of Bruges, but we have a kind of reduced Belgian version for what we say for Antwerp.
Yeah, pretty much.
Should we be saying Antwerpen?
You don't have to because you're not Belgian.
Okay, well, no, it's fine. Look, this is for a different podcast. But
do you say Bruxelles when you go to the capital?
Yes, I do.
No, you don't.
No, I don't. I also say Paris and Madrid. Yeah. Right, talk us through the climbs, Tom. What climbs have we got? That's what people want to know.
Well, I'll be honest, I haven't looked too far past the Oude Quarremont and the Paterberg, only because there's been a lot of talk about rider safety, and that was the first thing they said. So in the sort of opening 100 kilometres, and this was something they brought in last year from Bruges as well, the organisers have just said they're using a load of really wide roads, which they haven't done previously, and obviously they've come out with a press release saying that it's that last year it impacted the speeds and had a decisive impact on the style of racing, blah blah blah. I don't think it matters. It just means they can spread out wider and have a bit more space on the roads. But essentially, it is still the same finishing circuit that has been in place for the last decade, with that, that sort of 1-2 punch over the Oudequermont and Paterberg, and then down into, can't remember the name of the road, but that sort of dual carriageway, Philippe Gilbert lifting his bike over the finish line territory, into
I wondered how long it would be before Philippe got a shout out on this podcast. Tom, usually when we do a Flanders podcast, I like to do a reading from The Rhondda by Edward Pickering. And my reading this year I have selected is about the Paterberg.
I do. It's a lovely climb.
Yes, and this is it's only a short paragraph, so for those of you who don't like readings, then this will pass very slowly. But it's a wonderful book. It chronicles the year that Nick Nguyen's won, which was a very unexpected win, and something kind of, part of the magic of the monuments, which was in 2011, I think. And it goes through the race and the history of the race, and it uses that as a lens. But this is what Ed has to say about the Paterberg. He says, "The Paterberg wears its contradictions openly. It's a steep cobbled climb in the tradition of Flandrian bergs, only 375 meters long, but extremely steep, with an average gradient of 12.5% and a much steeper pitch at the top. However, it's entirely artificial. The story goes that the farmer who owns the land was envious of his friend who lived close to the Koppenberg and could enjoy the passing of the Tour of Flanders. So he built his own version, an ersatz helling, which has, artificial or not, become the absolute crux of the modern Rhondda. It's a real-life representation of the complexity of any debate between the forces of tradition and modernity." Now, interestingly, the last two editions of the Ronde van Vlaanderen, well, the last year's edition, the Paterberg was not the launch pad. It was the Oudequermont that both Tadej Pogacar and Lotto Kopecky went on.
Yeah, I mean, well, I will always tell you, because I'm sure when we do these previews, I repeat the same stuff every year. But my favorite Flanders moment is actually not Philippe Gilbert. It's Fabian Cancellara on the Paterberg against Peter Sagan all those years ago. So I would always look, if you've got the legs and you can go one climb earlier, fair enough, do it. But within that very, I actually didn't know it was an artificial hill, but in that very poetic description there, cobbles, steep, Belgium in March. I always think the gradient is the one that, especially in the at the sharp end of a race, will be the one to make the difference. So if I were riding, I would hold off until the Paterberg.
You'd go on the Paterberg.
Yeah. So if anyone's listening, riding on Sunday, there's your advice.
Love it if like whoever wins, like Wout van Aert, and he goes, "Yeah, well, I was listening on the TT podcast midweek actually, and Tom too said he'd go on the Paterberg, so I thought, well, that's the place to go."
If only, if only. He is a Fleming, isn't he? So he must, these are local roads for him.
Exactly. He'll know it anyway. Here's another fun fact for you, Tom. I say another fun fact as if I've been littering through the podcast. Here's the first fun fact, I think. The men's race is 270 kilometers long. The women's race is 163 kilometers long. The UCI recommends that women's races do not exceed 160 kilometers.
Once we've gone three over.
So we've gone 3 hours. So, I mean, they're going to be crawling through that last 3 kilometers if the UCI had, in the UCI's eyes.
Yeah, but why do the UCI recommend that? It's a stupid rule.
Yeah, I mean, it's dumb. Interestingly, Gent-Wevelgem, which was won last weekend by Lorena Wiebes, was 171 kilometers.
Well, there we go. Form's already there.
Right. Shall we talk about some of the favourites?
Yeah, I mean, I said this to you before we started recording. I think they largely pick themselves. I mean, I've got a list of the usual suspects who, whoever you don't name, I'll just throw the rest in there. So let's do it.
Okay, good. Let's start with the women's race. I am going to be controversial and say that I think the big favorite is Lotta Kopecky.
yeah, okay. I mean,
Start
I expected as
open
much.
with a curveball. But as I was
No,
saying,
we are expecting here.
Lotta Kopecky. Can you see past Kopecky winning?
Well, I can see at least, no, I can't, assuming everyone in her team, as usual, plays ball, because there are three other riders at least in that SD Works team who could win this race. You mentioned Lorena Wiebes, who has just come off winning Gent-Wevelgem. That's normally a good indicator of form. And Demi Vollering's obviously in that team, who will get herself over the climbs as well. But you would expect some team orders to be in play, so no one really knows what's going to be said in the car.
Wiebes, after she won Gent-Wevelgem, she gave an interview and she was basically like, you know, thanks for my team for all the support today. Looking forward to paying them back at the Tour of Flanders. And I was like, oh, you know, that's so good. Like, that's, you know, they sort out the leadership in this team. But then I was like, if you're Lorena Wiebes and you can win Gent-Wevelgem, which also has, I mean, not as many tough climbs and not as intense as Tour of Flanders, but like, there's some tough climbs in that one. There's the Kemmelberg, which is the
Yeah, I
toughest
mean,
one,
I'm
which
not an
is
expert
quite
on
similar
these.
to the Paterberg. It's like 20% gradient at the top, go over the top, and then there's like a 30K run into the line. It's not a dissimilar finish. So I don't see why she, I mean, there should come a time where she thinks I could win this race myself.
Yeah, I just, but especially based on what we saw at Strade as well, you'd think that Lotte Kopecky gets the nod from everyone, and that's just how the team is operating over these races.
The thing is, Wiebes is not going to go for the win in the year that the home Flemish favourite is wearing the rainbow jersey.
Again, that was my next point. Demi Vollering and Lorena Wiebes, both Dutch. They are the enemy. They are not welcome in Flanders. Lotte Kopecky is the homegrown hero.
She's the queen of Flanders. She's won at the last two
Exactly.
editions. She probably, I mean, she's looking strong at the moment. She was not quiet at Gent-Wevelgem. She was doing a lot of pulling on the hills, helped tear away the move that Wiebes, that carried Wiebes with her on the final climb. But she wasn't, you didn't get the impression that she was at full whack like she was when she won Strade Bianchi.
Yeah, and I would always go back to as well, you never know how it's going to play out on the road on the day, but in a straight up mano a mano, one on one, you know, whatever it comes down to, you'd back Lotte Kopecky in that one, wouldn't you?
Do you have some outside picks? I asked you to bring up some outside picks because it's going to be very boring if we come on here and just say the favorites.
Well, again, but even the outside picks are not that outsiders. They're just the best women's riders who don't ride for SD Works.
Go on then.
So I'm looking at Katia Niewiadoma.
Okay.
I am looking, liking the look of the little Trek team, actually, with Elisa Longo Borghini and Elisa Balsamo, as well as Lizzie Deignan in there.
The way you say I'm liking the look of, it's like you're reading through the Racing Post before like Cheltenham or something.
Well, that's what I spent a lot of time doing recently, anyway. So.
Anyone else there that stands out to you? Because I'm just aware that if we list all of the favourites, if we put 20 names down, then we're going to probably get one right.
Yeah, well, do you want me to just go through the rest of the start list and see who I
Yeah,
like?
if you could take us
Yep.
through 150 riders here.
Yeah, I'm down to Marianne Vos at 121 on her bib at the moment, if you want. So. I will not be backing her. Even though you can never rule her out, but I'm not backing her.
Do you know who I like as my outside pick?
No, please tell me.
I like Fenix de Koninx, Puk Pieterse.
Let
You
me scroll up my start list. Okay.
will recognize her as the cyclocross star with the fiery red hair. She this year is a debutant at the Tour of Flanders. It is only her 10th career road race. And after this race, she'll be basically stopping road racing for the rest of the season or for the foreseeable and turning to her preparation for the mountain bike at the Olympics. Her record this year has been very, very good. She's kind of overperforming for someone that's not used to road racing and is certainly not used to racing these sort of distances. She's had top 10s in basically every race she's done. Top 10 at Strade, top 10 at Gent-Wevelgem, top 10 at Alfredo Binder.
You love Trofeo Alfredo Binder, don't you?
I'm a big fan of the Trofeo Alfredo Binder, but I just think she's got nothing to lose. Her team's not going to have to chase. She's got strong teammates in the likes of Christina Schweinberger, who can pull a lot on the front. If she springs a move, and with that cyclocross background, she's probably raced like the Koppenberg. She's probably done the Koppenberg Cross. She'll know a lot of these climbs.
Look, you make a compelling argument, but I ask you now, are you picking her over Lotte Kopecky?
No, I'm not picking anyone
No,
over Lotte Kopecky.
definitely not.
Also, a couple of friends of the podcast that I think could do well in there.
Well, I could have thrown those names in there as well, but I didn't want to. I feel like I certainly just go down the same list of six or seven women cyclists every time because that's just who I think will win all the races.
The friends of the podcast I was referring to, by the way, Tom, were Pfeiffer Georgie and Eleanor
Absolutely.
Barker.
Of course.
Both in Pfeiffer Georgie was the only one that could follow Capecchi and Wiebes at Gent-Wevelgem. And Eleanor Barker is in kind of reinvigorated form since last season, gunning for the Olympics. Like, she's going to have very good legs for this race. Don't know. I think she's only raced once on the road this season at the Tour of Normandy. But she is a very good classics rider. So I think I'm not tipping her for the win, but I think a surprise top 10. Maybe a top five. I reckon she'll be in the front move.
Okay, that's certainly a bold pick.
There you go. But what I'm excited for, and is again something that we saw at Gent-Wevelgem, what was good about that race was that other teams were trying to disrupt SD Works Pro Time. And by that, I mean kind of in the final 25 kilometers, Movistar were throwing attacks, Emma Norsgaard, Florcia Mackay. Then we saw Grace Brown go on the attack for FDJ Suez. Like, they're not, I mean, again, last season they weren't exactly rolling over, but I think even more so this season, after last season where SD Works got a kind of record number of wins, it was like 60 something or 50 something.
Well, you have to. Otherwise, every race is a procession, otherwise, so you have to.
But it's also, I mean, for the sponsors are going to be like, well, this is, I mean, great for SD Works. If you're working for SD Works, who I think are some sort of HR company, great for them. Great for them. But for the other teams, it's like, well, their winning is at the expense of us. Like, we're not getting as many wins. So this season, they're really trying to disrupt.
Amazing exposure for this sponsor, who I think do this.
Yeah. Yeah. They're on tip of everyone's tongue now. And everyone has no idea what they do. Men's race.
Okay, let's get Matthew van der Poel out of the way very quickly.
No, the men's race is a bit washed without Tadej, to be honest.
I don't know. There's a few there.
Well, I think when you don't have the defending champion there and you don't have the guy who is ripping up the scene at the moment, it's a bit like there's a bit of what ifery, isn't there? Like,
He has other fish to fry.
well, I just think, I mean, it's the sort of thing, the result at the end of the day should have an asterisk next to it and be like, Tadej wasn't there.
I'm not sure. I'm not
That's
sure about
unfair,
that.
actually. That's unfair.
My outright favorite, as always, will be Mathieu van der Poel.
Okay, well, I'll go along party lines and I'll go for Wout van Aert.
Well, van Aert. Okay, that's good. We can move on to some outsiders then.
Great.
I would say I would like Wout van Aert to win it because he hasn't yet, and he does obviously deserve one with the caliber of rider that he is, and he's local. So it would be a great moment if and when he does win it. I just always think van der Poel will beat him to the line.
Can you imagine how much 9% beer they will sell in Flanders if both Lotte Kopecky and Wout van Aert win the Tour of Flanders?
I mean, it's crazy though. You'll be straight to is it Antwerp or is it Bruges? There's a beer wall somewhere. I must have talked about this before.
A beer wall.
There's a there, yeah. They, oh, they sell every. I think they have every beer that is sold or made in Belgium.
Well, I don't think that's possible. I mean, we're talking thousands of beers here.
Yeah, this beer wall is a very impressive place.
What do you mean by a beer wall?
There's a wall full of beers.
So, what I'm thinking of, what I'm picturing is, you know how back in the day, the operator would, you'd call the operator on the phone and they would have that kind of wall in front of them with all the different things and they'd put the little thing in. I'm describing it very badly, but that kind of operator's wall at the phone thing.
I'm getting a picture up now.
But instead of that, it's taps of beer.
Well, some of them come in bottles. It looks like that. It is a wall of beer.
Oh, it's bottles.
Well, no, they have draft as well, but yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, that would be, they'd drink the thing dry.
Quick question then I've got for you. Do you know who the last Flemish Belgian was to win the Tour of Flanders?
Lotte Kopecky.
Sorry, I've got the men's race here.
I was being pedantic. The last Flemish Belgian to win the Tour of Flanders. So I'd say Nick Nuyens. What? Oh, no, maybe he's French. Maybe he's French.
No, he is Belgian, but someone won it the year after him.
Tom Boonen.
Yeah, 2012.
There
So
you go.
12 years they've been waiting now. Obviously, Philippe Gilbert got one, but he is a Walloon.
He's a Walloon. Yes, he is from. Where's he from?
I don't know, Liège or somewhere, one of those French-sounding cities in Belgium.
Somewhere French speaking. Okay. Yeah. Well, there you go. They've been waiting a while. That's a. I mean, getting. I mean, how long is a generation? Is that a generation?
Well, there'll be 12-year-old kids who've never seen a Fleming win.
I guess so. I mean, and Burnham's not racing anymore, so I guess we're a generation after Burnham now.
Well, that's what I mean. Wout van Aert is obviously the big hope and has never managed to put it together. He's been unlucky several times already.
Okay. Here's a fun get. Oh, you're going to say something.
As you said, on the subject of Gent-Wevelgem, well, as well, Wevelgem, is that how you say it? It doesn't
Ah,
matter.
very good. Get the
Yeah.
phlegm in there.
Yeah. We talked about Lorena Wiebes winning. Mads Pedersen also going to be way up there, the two winners.
Okay, well, you've kind of ruined the game that I was going to do. Well, maybe not actually. Look,
What was
here's
the
what I was going to say was here's a fun game. Which rider has the most wins in 2024? You'll never guess.
Unfortunately for you, I probably logged on to our Twitter account in the week, so I actually know who won the races last weekend. Is it Mads Pedersen?
Is Mads Pedersen. That's the male rider anyway. I don't know if a female has had more wins than Mads Pedersen. 7 wins in 2024. It's only March.
Where have they been? Well, I know one of them.
Gent-Wevelgem.
Yep.
He also won quite a lot at the Tour de la Provence and another minor stage race that he won, Étoile de Bessèges.
Another race that you like that we have talked about before, I'm sure.
The Étoile, yes, he won. Sorry, I don't mean to say minor stage race. I mean to say major stage race. The Étoile de Bessèges. He won a lot of stages there, and he won the overall at both of them. There's somebody else who has 7 wins in 2024.
A female rider.
I haven't looked at the females.
Okay, I
I
thought
only
you were
looked at the
going to.
list of men.
Seven wins in 2024.
Another rider with 7.
I might need a clue here. Can you tell me where he got these wins?
He got most of them at a stage race in Spain.
Oh, you know what? Is it the? So it's the Volta a Catalunya.
Not the Volta.
No. Then, well, it can't be the Ruta del Sol because that was only one stage in the end, wasn't
It was only about 7 kilometers in the
Yeah.
end. It was at O Gran Camino.
Is that in Spain? Yeah, it is, but in Galicia.
Yeah, I've never really understood the name of that race because.
Well, because in Galicia they basically speak Portuguese.
Oh, right. Okay, that makes sense because it is a kind of mashup, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay, I'll be honest, I've got no idea who won the stages there.
A fellow Dane.
Casper Asgreen.
No, Casper Asgreen has not won 7 races. It's Tom. This is gl glaringly obvious. Who is the best Danish rider?
Sprinter.
No.
No.
Gr Grand Tour winner.
Oh, really? Okay, so yeah, no, I know who it is. If you're talking a Grand Tour rider, the best from Denmark, obviously I know who it is. But that's completely passed me by that he's got 7 wins this year.
Who is it?
Jonas Vingegaard.
Interesting, isn't it? Jonas Vingegaard, so far this season, has more wins than Tadej Pogacar.
Yeah, I'm completely passed me by. I mean, with all due respect to O Gran Camino, it's not as high profile as what Tadej Pogacar has won.
Yeah, look, I mean, Tadej was doing it at the World Tour race, Volta a Catalunya. So Pogacar has 6. He's tied on. He's just below with Tim Melier and New Zealand's Aaron Gate, who all have 6.
Okay.
But the point I'm making is Mads Pedersen has won a lot of races.
Yeah, Mads Pedersen immediately is on the form of last week as well. Well, on the whole season, as we've just said, is my pick to be the biggest threat to those top two.
I think what we're going to see in the race, Tom, is a, I was going to say a three-way, that's probably not the right terminology, a triple threat
Kind of race.
of Pedersen, Van Aert, and Van der Poel go. I mean, we often see that at Flanders, right? Where the best riders kind of the cream rises to the top. Like when we had Alaphilippe, Van Aert, and Van der Poel that year.
Well, was that the year that Alaphilippe ran into the bike?
Yes, or the bike cut him up. I can't remember what happened. I think he was trying to draft off the bike and then he just went into the back of it.
I am glad you've mentioned Julian Alaphilippe as well, because he is back, and I think he will be a figure in this race as well.
He's so back, and I would love it if he's a figure in this race.
I know you would. The panache.
The panache of him after all the slagging that Patrick Lefebvre has given him, for him to come back, win the Tour of Flanders, go to the beer wall, drink the beer wall dry, wherever the beer wall is.
Bruges, it's in Bruges.
It's in Bruges. Did we confirm it was in Bruges?
I can't believe you've never heard of the beer wall. You go to Bruges, you go around the canals, and you have, you're right, they're you know, whatever orange flavored, whatever fruits they put in these Belgian beers. They're at 9% rocket fuel, take your head off. Made by nuns or monks or, you know, Trappist, whatever. This is Belgium in a nutshell.
I'm looking at the start of it. A couple of friends of the podcast here, by the way, Tom. We've got Lewis Askey, Fred Wright.
Fred Wright, top 10 last year.
Was it last year he got his top 10? He's good at Flanders. My off the wall pick. I'm liking Stefan Kung.
That's interesting. I hadn't looked at Kung.
How's he done this season? He's not got any top tens. Okay, I'm liking him less. I'm liking Biniam Gamai as well.
Oh, you've taken it away from me. I was just about to ask you. He is the other name I've got written down. I was in Yezi a couple of weeks ago where he won his Giro stage, and I sent you the picture as usual. So I do like Bini Gamai.
I like how you regularly go to Yessi to pay your respects to Biniam Gamai's Giro stage win.
A few nice restaurants around as well, but yeah, it was actually we were there to it was St. Patrick's Sunday, and we were going to an Irish bar so I could have my mandatory Guinness.
Yeah, I mean, don't pretend that you're only going there because it's St. Patrick's Day. Whenever you go abroad, you find an Irish bar.
They're hard to come by in Italy, I'll be very honest with you.
Well, you find them, mate. Is when you lived in Granada, you were like, oh, go to my favorite bar. It's an Irish bar, and I know the bloke behind the bar whose name is
Paddy, obviously.
Paddy. I'd forgotten that, but it is Paddy. Yes, you're right. Look, I like Biniam Gamai for this race, but not as much as I like Van der Poel and Wout van Aert.
Interesting. Oh, I've got one more name just come up as well.
Oh, a late entrant.
A late entrant. I think he's on the start list. Michael Matthews, second by a rim at Milan San Remo.
Yeah, I'm not sure if this race is for him, but he's
It's
in
one of
form.
those. He's not got the climbing ability of everyone else, has he? But if he can get over, he is probably quicker than everyone if it goes to a sprint the line.
Okay, interesting. We need to be aware that we are recording this on Tuesday. Tomorrow, Wednesday, there is Dwars Door of London, which is a little amuse-bouche for the Ronde, and
Oh, you should know
might.
how to say amuse-bouche in Dutch. You can't, that's too French for this race.
But in that race, all of these riders we've just tipped might crash out in a pile-up. So, fingers crossed. I think that's very unlikely. But yeah, that's how we see the race playing out.
You know what they are? I've just realized. They're probably partaking in exactly the same activity as what I will be doing later, because England are playing Belgium, and the moment we stop recording this, I'm going to go for a Diet Coke and to watch that game somewhere.
Is that a friendly?
It's a very boring friendly, the same as the Brazil game on Saturday night. Yeah.
What was the score of the Brazil game? I didn't watch that.
We lost 1-0.
Okay.
We being England, you pretending to be Scottish at this point, I assume.
Very good. No, I'm not pretending to be Scottish. Look, Tom, if I was picking a team to support, I would support England because they're very good. But my dad is Scottish and my football upbringing is Scottish. My cultural upbringing is Scottish. So tonight I will be, as I am usually, I'll be shouting all four of the Flemish words that I know at the TV for Belgium. Let's close on a fun fact about Belgium. You might have been the one that told me this because you know a lot of language stuff. in the dressing room of the Belgian national football team, the spoken language is English rather than Flemish or French.
I think so, yeah, because it is a controversial issue in Belgium, and you get a lot of this. You know, there's a big Flemish separatist movement, and there's probably similar in the Walloon area, and certainly, like, you know, it's been a controversial thing in Brussels because Brussels is a Flemish city that speaks French now, and people from Flanders don't like that, and therefore the diplomatic choice when, you know, all of Belgium has to come together to compete is English.
Which is why we have done this tour of Flanders preview in English
With a bit of French and Dutch thrown in there.
with a bit of French, amuse-bouche, a bit of Dutch at the top, Guten Morgen. And
There is also about 2 or 3% of Belgium that speaks German.
is that true? Well,
Yeah, right on the border with Germany somewhere, but yeah, within the territory of Belgium, there's a German-speaking community.
I guess for those, for that community, Tom. It is now time to say Auf Wiedersehen.
You've done it. Well done. Yeah.
There you go. Tom, a pleasure as always chatting with you. I hope you enjoy. Will you be watching the Tour of Flanders?
It's Easter Sunday. I've just realized that. So, but yes, I will be.
Okay, well that's good. I'm working.
With a big chocolate egg, basically. Yeah.
I'm working, so I'll be writing the reports. So I'll be watching every kilometer. Tom, for then. Where can people follow us on social media platforms that we have basically stopped using?
They can find us on Twitter and Insta at TTPDCST.
Perfect. Thank you very much for listening, everybody. Tom, a pleasure as always catching up with you. And we'll do it all again next week.
Goodbye.